from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Coming up in the first half of our show, allegations of domestic violence against San Francisco's new sheriff. Ross Mercurimi denies he abused his wife on New Year's Eve, contradicting a neighbor's story. The DA says he'll decide this week whether to file charges. We'll discuss the political and legal implications. Then, what's up with the weather? It's weird, it's wonderful, unless you own a ski resort. What's behind our very dry and warm weather, and could it signal another drought? We'll get started with Forum right after this. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. We're splitting this hour in two, and we begin with allegations of domestic violence against Ross Mercurimi, San Francisco's new sheriff. District Attorney George Gascon could decide as early as today whether to file charges. A neighbor of Mercurimi's called the police last week, reporting that the former city supervisor's wife, Eliana Lopez, told her Mercurimi had physically abused her. Mercurimi and his wife are downplaying the charges, saying the neighbor overreacted. Here to talk about the legal and political implications of this are Rachel Gordon, City Hall reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
And also joining us by phone, Peter Keene. He is the Dean Emeritus and a professor of law at Golden Gate University Law School. Peter Keene, good morning to you as well.
Good morning, Scott.
Let me begin with you, Peter. What are the legal issues here?
The legal issues in domestic violence charges are really quite simple, and that is the number of the penal code, for anyone who's interested, is 273.5 of the California Penal Code. And what it says is that anyone who willfully, that is, you do it, you know you're doing it, you're willfully doing, inflicts upon a spouse any kind of violence which results in a traumatic condition is guilty of domestic abuse. Now, the traumatic condition, that sounds like it'd be somewhat complicated. It's not. It's very simple. It talks about it as being any injury, like a wound of any kind, no matter how minor. So something like a bruise, even, would apply for this charge. And it could be either a felony or a misdemeanor at the option of the district attorney in terms of charging it as a felony or a misdemeanor. So that's the legal aspect of it.
And how much discretion does a prosecutor have?
Total discretion. The prosecutor can go ahead and charge it, and that's the end of the story. The judge can't say, no, you should have charged it in some other way. At the beginning, a judge, after hearing a case before it goes to a jury, could go ahead and reduce it to a misdemeanor, or could reduce it to a misdemeanor at sentencing. But in the beginning, as to whether it's going to be charged as a felony or a misdemeanor, the prosecutor has total discretion.
And based on what we've been hearing in the media, what do we know about the evidence here, the facts of this case?
Well, we know a few things. We don't know really the details of some of the things. We know that a woman who was a neighbor claims that Mrs. Mercurimi came to her, was upset, said that she had been abused by Ross Mercurimi, and that she had some sort of the bruise. It was described as a bruise, and that the neighbor videotaped the bruise, and also that Mrs. Mercurimi made certain statements to the neighbor about what happened, and that may or may not be recorded. That's unclear. And what's in those statements, what it is she actually said to the neighbor about what happened, the specifics, the quotes, those have not been released.
So that's
what we know.
Okay. And Rachel Gordon, politics. You cover City Hall. There was a sheriff's race this year, and Ross Mercurimi was one of three leading candidates, the other one being Chris Cunney, who was a former head of the police officers union. The other one, Paul Miyamoto, was a deputy or a sheriff.
Captain.
Captain in the sheriff's department. That race was kind of under the radar, but talk about that, that race and Mercurimi and his relationship with, you know, law enforcement in San Francisco.
Right. Well, Ross Mercurimi has been around City Hall for a long time. He was District 5 supervisor, that's at Haight-Ashbury and Western Addition, parts of Hayes Valley, Inner Sunset, for 7 years. He had been an aide in City Hall to another supervisor, active in the Green Party at the state and local levels. So he's been a player in city politics for a long time. He's also a former investigator in the district attorney's office, and that is, allows him to be sheriff. You have to be a peace officer, and he is indeed a peace officer. He went through the police academy. So he ran for sheriff and had the endorsement of Michael Hennessy, who had been sheriff for 32 years. It was a coveted endorsement. People wanted it. Hennessy was one of the most popular politicians in the city, got elected 8 times, unprecedented. And so it was a pretty tight race between two people who came really from law enforcement, another person who came from the political circles in San Francisco. Ross ran as a solid progressive, as he has been, always has voted with the liberal flank on the Board of Supervisors. And he was really the kind of the progressive's candidate in this race. They didn't win the district attorney in this last election. They didn't win the district attorney's race. They didn't win the mayor's race. So they really were focusing on trying to get Mercurimi elected.
And I believe he chaired the Public Safety Committee in the Board of Supervisors.
And he, actually, as supervisor, he focused very heavily on law enforcement, public safety issues. He's a big champion of community policing. He jumped on the whole issue of the realignment issue that's going on at the state, which is where the state prisons are going to be putting people who otherwise were diverting prisoners to local programs, either the jails or the probation departments. And he was really the one who orchestrated that from a legislative angle at City Hall. So he was very well seeped in those issues.
And how would you describe his relationship with the police department?
It was frosty on the whole. Now, we have to remember the San Francisco Police Department in itself is very political. It's not in lockstep in any way in terms of mind think. So there are different political factions there. Some people who go with a progressive world, going back to Mayor Art Agnos and others who are going back to Gavin Newsom and others. So there has been a split there. But he was really trying with his community policing initiatives to kind of dictate what he wanted the police department to do. And the police department's a paramilitary organization, which ultimately is under the control of the police commission and the mayor. They didn't want to be told what to do by the Board of Supervisors. But he really did push that issue. And he also, though, we have to also say, he's very good with policing issues. He himself has tracked down culprits, I think, in a, I don't know if it's a purse snatching or carjacking or whatever, but he was right out there. And if there was ever a violent, serious crime like a homicide in his neighborhood, he'd be at the scene.
Rachel Gordon, City Hall reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. She's with us for this half hour, along with Peter Keene from Golden Gate University Law School. We're talking about charges against Ross Mercurimi, charges, allegations of domestic violence. The DA is now looking into that matter. And because we're just going to go to the bottom of the hour, let's open up the phone lines early. If you want to join us this half hour, 866-733-6786 is the number, 866-733-6786, or you can also email your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org. Peter Keene, you mentioned earlier that there is some discretion, some decision to be made about whether the district attorney, if he files any charges, will go for a misdemeanor or felony charges. What are the considerations there?
Well, generally, it would be the extent of the injury and whether or not it was really, if someone really engaged in a vicious attack upon a spouse and hurt them badly, that would be a felony. But if it's something is quite minor, and we're hearing about a bruise, now that doesn't mean that they still couldn't charge it as a felony. If something is quite minor and it's a one-time out-of-character type situation, and there are other factors that are involved that might mitigate it, then those are the things upon which a district attorney would make a decision relating to charging it as a felony. Now, I should add, because I listed the things that we know about in terms of militating towards filing of the charges, I should add that Mrs. Mercurimi and Ross Mercurimi, both of them deny that it happens, and they're saying it didn't happen. So on that, on their side of the coin, they're denying the charges.
But how does the law look at that fact?
Well, I think in a couple of interesting ways. Generally, for example, a wife cannot be made to testify against her husband, nor reveal spousal communications, but there's an exception to that privilege in the California Evidence Code, and that is if there is a crime committed against the spouse. Then the spouse can be made to testify against the spouse who's charged with the crime, and it can also be forced to, under threat of contempt, to testify and reveal the spousal discussions that were had. So that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it is that historically, the fact that spouses are refusing to testify or saying that it didn't happen. In domestic battery cases, oftentimes district attorneys will be wary of that and will go ahead anyway because of the relationship of spouses not wanting to harm the marriage, and even though there was something that happened that was an abuse, they don't want to testify against the husband. Here we have a child that's involved, they have a son, so all of those things are going to be part of the equation in weighing whether or not the police believe Mrs. Mercorini, or also weighing whether they're going to charge it as a felony or a misdemeanor.
Let's, as I mentioned, the ball now is in the court of George Gascon, who was also sworn in this past week as district attorney. Let's hear what he had to say yesterday at a press conference.
I think it would be a mistake for anyone to consider this case as a personal matter. It is a crime, if it in fact occurred. And we're moving very quickly, and as I indicated, I hope to bring this case forward before the end of the week, if we can. But then again, we're going to make sure that we do everything that we have to do in order to do this appropriately.
Rachel Gordon, you wanted to jump in there, a comment about that.
Yeah, just what the district attorney said about this being a personal matter, that's something that Ross Mercorini said after his swearing in on Sunday. He had a brief dialogue with the press about it, and he said this is a family matter, it's a private matter, a personal matter, and that's where it came up. His wife, Eliana Lopez, was standing next to him at that, and I think that got a lot of people going, where you saw the DA jump in and others say, no, really, domestic violence is not a family matter, a personal matter, it's a public matter.
Yeah.
So that's the difference there.
Let me ask you a question. This is a tricky one, but whenever charges of any kind are raised in the public forum like this with a public official or someone who's well known or known publicly as Ross Mercorini is, sometimes people say, oh, I can't believe he'd do that. That doesn't seem like him at all. And then some people say, you know, it kind of makes sense to me, or I believe it. You know, does Ross Mercorini have a reputation in one way or another that would lead people to believe, you know, on either side of that kind of equation?
I think there's mixed feelings about Ross Mercorini. He definitely has driven his staff very hard at City Hall over the years. No one I've talked to said that they've had any idea that he could do violence against someone. There's no one said that's been brought up before. I haven't ever heard that before. I don't know him personally. I just know him through his political work at City Hall. And that part, that equation's there. But it's really mixed views of how he's been. He's very blustery, you could say. He's not a screamer in public, and there's mixed feelings about what he's been behind closed doors to his staff. I've not witnessed it myself.
Okay. Peter Keene, I do want to go to the calls in just a moment, but talk about the politics of the police department. Rachel Gordon alluded to this earlier. This information was apparently leaked to the media, probably by the police department. I don't know. That's not terribly unusual. But what can a police department do for or against a public official if they're so inclined?
Oh, they can sink a public official. And San Francisco, as Rachel says, is a very, very political town. And the police department is a very politicized paramilitary organization. And this is not just true of San Francisco, but in many other places. But in San Francisco, probably a little more so than others. So if you have a public figure who is in the crosshairs of the police department and that public figure is in trouble, the police department can very much manipulate public opinion relating to what happens. There are certain people in the police department, not the police department as a matter of policy, the chief or anything like that, but certain members of the police department. For example, the San Francisco Political POA is infamous in regard to if they don't like a particular public figure, they go after them in very Machiavellian ways. Now, I'm not saying that that's necessarily happening here, but Mercurini, if he does indeed have enemies in the police department, and they're privy to information, or they're privy to the ears of media people, then they can put some fairly significant things out there if they want to harm them.
All right, let's go to the phones now, and Neil in Menlo Park. Good morning.
Good morning. I have two comments, and then I'll turn it over to your guests to comment on those comments. The first one is I think the host at one point talked about charges versus allegations, and I'm not familiar with all the facts, but we should probably clarify the difference between allegations, which I think the case is at right now, versus formal charges. And then the second point is that maybe the law professor wants to comment and educate the public as to the issue of this being a public matter or matter for public enforcement as opposed to a civil lawsuit, because some people might have the view that, oh, if the wife doesn't want to press charges, why is this being pursued? So with those two comments, I'll turn it over to the host and the guest, I guess.
Okay, Neil, thanks for the call. As I said, the DA is investigating whether or not to bring formal charges. There are allegations from the neighbor, that will be sorted out in the coming day or two. Peter Keene, on the other point, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I think that raises a very significant question relating to the whole nature of domestic violence. And this is something that there have been tremendous developments about in the last generation, particularly as a result of the feminist movement and attempts to protect women from abuse by spouses. Historically, you know, back, say, a generation ago, if a woman said, I'm not going to prosecute, the DA would just drop it. But it's become known, it's generally known, that oftentimes women who are battered and abused and in relationships, there's a tremendous pressure on them not to go forward and to remain the victims, sometimes to remain the victims even to the point where they're harmed or killed. That's why in this situation it's somewhat unusual where you have a victim saying, no, I'm not going to prosecute, I don't want to. That the district attorney is going to say, oh, that isn't going to carry much weight with the district attorney because of the other societal factors that are involved that intimidate and keep women from going forward. And just the needs of, say, the breadwinner in the family and having a child and not having any support. So the prosecutor has to look at it very neutrally in terms of saying, no, this is a crime. If it happens, it's a crime. And your views, they're rather irrelevant.
866-733-6786, the number if you want to join us this half hour. We're talking about allegations of domestic abuse involving the sheriff of San Francisco, Ross Mercurimi. 866-733-6786. And let's go to Colin in San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is regarding the neighbor. I understand that she is an attorney. It doesn't sound to me like that somebody with credibility issues would go ahead and risking her own career to make unfounded allegations against Mr. Mercurimi. There are also text messages and photographs of the bruises, according to what I've heard in the news accounts. It doesn't really seem to me that even if Mr. Mercurimi's wife were to testify that there had been no domestic violence, that a jury would necessarily believe that. I guess my question really is, maybe it would be better for Mr. Mercurimi if he did have these allegations vetted through a public criminal trial, if he's really disputing domestic violence had occurred, even if it was a misdemeanor.
Yeah, and that'll certainly be sorted out in the coming days and weeks. But Rachel Gordon, to his point about the neighbor, her name is Ivory Madison. What do we know about her?
She's a lawyer, as the caller said, that she does some media training, I think, and she's kind of well-known in society circles. You can Google her and find her name places. What we've been told has happened, again, we haven't seen any public records, so we have to go on sources in the different law enforcement agencies, but that the alleged incident occurred on New Year's Eve. The next day, on New Year's Day, that Aliana Lopez went to the neighbor, who I presume is a friend, and told her what happened. There are also, as he said, there are text messages between the two that maybe described the alleged incident. And then the video was taken. It wasn't for a couple of days, though, that Ivory Madison called the police department to discuss the whole issue. What happens in these cases? How do you report it? The officers then came to interview her, found out about the videotape and the text messages. She refused, were told, to turn them over. They went and got a court order to have them turned over. So that's what we know about her. I did Google her as well, and I found on a political calendar that in October she held a fundraiser for Ross Mercurimi for his race for sheriff.
And they're Facebook friends. If you look at her Facebook page, you'll find that as well. Colin, thanks for the call. Peter Keene, how does the credibility, the motivation, the testimony potentially of the neighbor, how does that figure into all of this?
Oh, I think that's the deciding factor, really, in this situation. And that's why, based upon what we're hearing, if assuming all of this is true about the neighbor, it seems to be someone who has a fair amount of credibility, doesn't have any axe to grind, that would make it much more difficult for Ross Mercurimi. Because in many domestic battery situations, it's either he said, she said, and then between the wife and the husband, and then the wife is sort of backpedaling because doesn't want to prosecute. Here, if you have a neutral person, or not just a neutral person, someone who seems in the past to have been very much a fan of Mercurimi's, she's going to be a very powerful witness for the prosecution. If, again, these things that we're hearing in the media, if they pan out to be the actual facts, she's alleging.
Excuse me, let me just read a quick email here. Tony writes, there's no story here. The neighbor is not an MD and is therefore not qualified to judge whether any injuries were traumatic. Both Mr. Mercurimi and his wife deny that the event happened. I'm pleased to learn that so many of the world's problems have been solved, allowing KQED to devote precious airtime to this. Peter Keene?
No. You don't have to be a clinician or an MD to know what a bruise is. And in regard to the statute itself, again, just recapping the statute, it says any kind of corporal injury and the results in a traumatic condition. But that traumatic condition is defined in very minor ways. It says a wound.
Yeah.
Whether minor or serious, and a bruise is a wound.
And Rachel Gordon, this is a town that takes domestic violence very seriously.
Right, it does, and we have to consider this. I mean, you can go, yes, it's an allegation now. There have been no charges, but he is a public official, and now he's a public law enforcement official in the criminal justice system. And the jail system in San Francisco has a very strong program on domestic violence to try to get inmates to deal with domestic violence, to do anger management. They have the restorative justice where you go and apologize to the victims. You see how you can restore faith and any damage that you've done to them. So there's a lot of irony in this as well. And that's not lost on anyone. I think that it is a story. Whether it's fair to Mercurimi at this time, if he's going to be exonerated, that's another question.
We're very short on time, but Peter Keene, just in a few seconds, if you would, what could happen next? I mean, could we see, if there are charges brought, a booking photo? I mean, is there going to be, how is this going to play out? How could this play out if charges are brought?
I think it's likely that if charges were brought, that he'll surrender. There'll be a booking photo, but I doubt that you're going to see someone like Chief Gascon going for any kind of perp walk or anything like that. I mean, that'll be done rather quietly in terms of his lawyer bringing him down. And he'll surrender, and then if he's charged again, if he hasn't been charged, and then it will play out in terms of either some sort of plea bargain or a trial.
Okay, Peter Keene, thanks so much from Golden Gate University. Law School. Thanks also to Rachel Gordon, City Hall reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. And of course, all of us will be continuing to follow this story in the days and potentially weeks to come. Scott Schaefer here for Michael Krasny. We're going to continue in the next half hour talking about the weather and its impact and why it's so weird.